What I'd like to do is to just throw out a whole bunch of ideas and material and thoughts, and then let's share our experiences and our insights. I'd like to say a few things about multiplication to begin with. And I'm sure that in your thinking, you are more interested in multiplication than in addition. It's interesting in several passages. I won't read all of them, but in Leviticus 26:8, it talks about five chasing 100. In Isaiah 60:22, it talks about one becoming 1,000. In Joshua 23:10, it talks about one chasing 1,000. In Deuteronomy 32:30, it talks about one chasing 10,000 and two putting 10,000 to flight. And in these proportions, the one in Leviticus, you break it down and it's one having an impact on 20. The next two, one on 1,000. But it's interesting, Deuteronomy 32:30, that two are going to put 10,000 to flight. And in most of what we do, most of what you do, you're dealing with couples. And it's two people having a giant impact for what God wants to accomplish. When we're talking about the church, there are tremendous ministries to single people. There's the tremendous ministries to young people growing up from the the nursery on up. But most of us, when we're thinking of ministry, we're thinking of an impact as a couple. In the Living Bible, in Ecclesiastes 4:9-10, does someone happen to have that one here? I didn't bring my Living Bible. Maybe you can just hand that to me and I'll read that for you. But did you hit pretty okay? 4:9-10. It says, two can accomplish more than twice as much as one. For the result can be much better. If one fails, the other pulls him up. But if a man falls when he is alone, he is in trouble. And it's fantastic to have a ministry as a couple. In multiplication, working with the church, there have been three problems. As I've talked to pastors and as I've talked to laymen, there have been three problems that we've run into in trying to do a multiplication ministry. We have to concentrate on a few and do a thorough job. And as I talk to pastors and key laymen, they say, I keep running into this. They accuse me of partiality. I've decided to work with these four couples in our church, and I give them lots of time. A pastor confided in me, said, I want to give my time to 10 men, but my board is giving me all kinds of trouble. I say, you are to minister to the whole congregation, and we feel that that's detracting from that. I'll tell you the problems, and we'll see if we can work out the solutions, but this is a perennial problem in trying to do a multiplication ministry where quality begets quantity, where we have to concentrate on a few. And it isn't exclusively a problem of those that are associated with the Navigators. When the Bethel series first came out, you're familiar, came through the Lutheran denomination, and now it's being used broadly, giving people an overall grasp on the Bible, and the assignments are rather difficult, and this sort of thing. They were accused of partiality. They had this problem. So whatever group is trying to do a multiplication thing, whether it's come from outside the church or from within, this is a thing we have to deal with. Now there's a problem of enforcing standards in the local church. Whether we like it or not, we have a pattern set up in evangelical Christianity where people get by with not having to complete their work and not having to be on time and not having to be thorough. I don't say this critically because I'm a part of that system as well as you. And so when we get into trying to raise the standards, to enforce that is difficult. And I've talked again with pastors, and they said, well, I tried to enforce these standards, and you know what they can say to me, don't you? They can say, well, there's a church that's 5 miles closer. We've been wanting to visit there anyway. Keep your standards. And so, you know, it's difficult to really put the screws to somebody and tighten up on them. A third problem is the diversity of spiritual levels, which we're constantly running into in the local church context. Sunday school class is a perfect example. We're generally in there by age bracket, not in there by spiritual age bracket. And so in one Sunday school class, if you have been a Sunday school teacher, some of you perhaps are pastors here, you've experienced this problem of having to give a talk or lead a discussion or teach to everything from a baby to somebody who's ready to be translated directly into heaven the week after next. And we have to communicate to that widest spectrum. And it's difficult. Boy, these dear pastors, I feel for them to have to get up and give a stimulating presentation every Sunday to 47 different needs, everything from animosity and antagonism to those who just worship Him and love Him. And it's difficult. So when we get into multiplication within the local church, we have to face those three problems. Let's try to deal with them briefly, and I don't have a lot of insight into this. But on partiality, let's say we're going to do the multiplication thing. And I'm thinking of churches in the Denver area, which is where my wife and I work. One of those churches has decided that they are, those that are in an advanced Bible study, those people are selected. That's not thrown open to the whole congregation. We had a big conference in Disneyland a few months ago, and there were about 2,000 people. And First Baptist Church Modesto, that's an American Baptist church, which is a renegade within that denomination. But they have been very successful in their church ministry, and they put on institutes where pastors and church staff come in and learn how they do it. And so I got with some of the church staff and five or six of their couples out of that church, and I just wanted to learn everything I could from them. And they wanted to hear about what we were doing in Denver. They said they only allow their people two activities. That's all. And four of those activities are the people are selected by the church staff. And so they have set up a system where there is built-in partiality, but it is understood that you are hand-picked to do the visitation evangelism. You don't just sign up and say, hey, I'd like to do that. You are hand-picked. To get into the advanced Bible study thing, you are hand-picked based on your performance in the Sunday school, in just your relationship with others in the church and where they think you are spiritually. And so this is being handled, and you know, if we just lay it out and say this is the way it is, oftentimes people will accept it. If the board approves it, if the consistory or elders or deacons or whoever decides, this is dealt with. Question or comment at this point?
Advanced Bible study, are you speaking primarily in terms of the teacher or the people who attend it?
On the advanced Bible study, those are the ones who attend. Those are not the teachers. Thank you. Yes. How are the people picked? The church staff gets acquainted with them through the regular church program. And so those who are the teachers, for example, they are always out looking for those sharp couples who mean business for Christ. And so one of the teachers will recommend it to the church staff. And there's a very close relationship between church staff and those key laymen. So that's how partiality is being handled in some instances. On enforcing of standards, probably the key thing in where this is working within the local churches is where the standards are clarified prior to the people getting into the thing. I was listening to a tape on motivation by Dr. Howard Hendricks when he was speaking to Campus Crusade staff people. I don't know where we got a hold of that tape, but I'm impressed with some of the things he talks about on really getting people excited and motivated. And he shared on there an experience where a pastor was just starting a training program for Sunday school teachers. And it was a smaller church, and the thing was just getting started. And three people showed up for the training, and they're expecting about 40. And of course, what he was illustrating, he said that when the pastor got up, it really showed, his disappointment really showed. And what Dr. Hendricks was saying, well, when in critiquing this afterward, was, wow, come in there and say, wow, just think of what's going to happen with these three people. Just think of what we're going to do. We're getting started, and just blow the lid off of it through excitement. And somehow, we aren't geared that way. We're afraid that this thing's going to start small. We want a bigger impact. And so on enforcement of standards, what we're up against then is to clarify what the issues are, set what the standards are, and then be willing to have fewer people initially. And then by word of mouth, the thing really explodes. A church I grew up in my college days in Seattle, they had trouble instituting this teacher training thing. And as it developed, people were just excited. And they had standards, and they had to meet these standards. In a friend's church in Denver that we've worked with 11 churches in Denver as the navigators. And they had a PhD on the staff who his specialty was curriculum. And he worked out a whole procedure to ensure that the standards of Sunday school teachers was maintained. So they had to go through training, briefer courses, refresher courses. And it is working. But the two things I'd like to stress there is one, that the people know what they're getting into. And then number two, a willingness to start small and get the quality. And then when they hear how good it is, others are willing to get into a higher standard thing. One other thing that pops in my mind, I think I should say. Several years ago, I was talking to a man who at that time was on our staff, Campus Crusade staff, and Young Life staff. I don't think that can be possible today. And now he's been working several years in Washington, D.C. with government officials and business people. Doug Coe is his name, if you run across him. And so I was just a little peon that was just barely trying to figure out how to do any kind of ministry. And boy, I was all ears. I'd taken notes. And he was talking to another navigator staff man. And he said, our objective right now is to reach the state of Oregon. That's what we're working on. And of course, you know that Mark Hatfield came to Christ through the influence of Doug Coe and some others. And so they had the governor, and so they were really controlling Young Life, Campus Crusade, and Navigators within the state of Oregon, and they were going to make an impact on Oregon. They meant business. And so as he was talking, he said, you know, he said, a couple years ago when we tried to get people recruited to this vision, he said we had kind of come up to him and say, listen, well, maybe you'd like to help us kind of work on this thing of reaching the state of Oregon. And kind of think it over. And he said hardly anybody wanted to pitch in with us, was the term he used. Hardly anybody wanted to pitch in with us. But he said, you know, we do it differently now. He said, we tell them this. We want all your time. We want all your money. We want all your dedication. And we're going to reach the state of Oregon. You've got a week or 10 days to think it over. Give us your decision. He said, we're turning them away. They want it. So this thing of enforcement of standards is a sleeper. And so there may be an application where you are on that. Don't be afraid to put some standards. On diversity of spiritual levels, I think a way I'd like to... well, let me talk about it. We might diagram that in a few minutes. In the local church, Let me flip to another visual aid here that I think will help us on that. You're getting miscellaneous from about five different workshops I've given, and so I don't know how this is all going to end up. Now, this is my personal bias I'm showing you here. You pastors, please forgive me. How many of you pastors in here? Just let me see. So if you frown, I'll smile back at you. I just want. Okay. For worship service, now this is my own personal prejudice. But it seems to me that the worship service should be uplifting, it should be positive, it should be encouraging. On occasion, there should be a challenge. But two things that ought to be communicated from the pulpit week after week after week is that the Bible is practical and that God has the answers. So it doesn't matter what the subject is, it doesn't matter what the emphasis is, if that could be communicated, I think we're in business. Now, why do I say that? Because Sunday morning is where we get the transient people. We get those fringe people. I don't know how many people I've talked to in Denver in the last 4 years that we've been there who said, I looked for a church for a year, or I was visiting churches for 2 years, or we were visiting churches for 6 months to find one we liked. Usually the fringe people feel guilty. They are defeated. They are frustrated. They have needs. So if they come there and they're uplifted, they get a positive intake, they say, hey, the Bible is practical and God has answers, they'll come back. Then Christian education. It seems to me that in there they should be learning the Bible. They should be getting information about the Word of God. They should be gaining a hunger for the Bible. When I hear Dr. Jack Mitchell, who was Multnomah School of the Bible, when he speaks to our staff, my mouth waters. It literally waters to get into the Bible. Before he'll teach a book, even if he's taught it before, he reads it 30 times to refresh his mind. And he was giving us Genesis 1 year. And I've forgotten how long it takes to read Genesis. It seems to me it was between 3 and 4 hours. But he read it 30 times before he'd teach us. And I mean, I was just hungry for the Word of God. If you're a Sunday school teacher, pray that God will do this through you. And they should be coming along spiritually. Now, let me put in context, what we're working on here is diversity of spiritual levels is a problem. Now, the normal church program can handle that. If there's the positive encouragement from the pulpit, if there is Christian education where there aren't high standards, but they're constantly getting input and excited about the Bible, these people are on the way. Now, a third level would be that of training. Now, here we're talking about commitment. We're talking about enforced standards. We're talking about their learning skills. Evangelism is a skill. Leading Bible study groups is a skill. So where you are in your development, you are undoubtedly into this training level. A lot of what you get here this week will be at the training level. Some of it will be at the Christian education or teaching level. You put teaching in parentheses by Christian education. But here the people should volunteer. This should not be something that's legislated in a local church. And so the people say, yes, I do want to go through the evangelism training. Or yes, I do want to get training in more advanced kind of Bible study. Now, the fourth level is that of building. And I think that's done at the family level. I don't think it's done in the local church. That's where the character is changing. And probably that is done in the home. There just is not enough time at the church for this to happen. And we as parents have a responsibility before God for the character of our children. Now, there are outside inputs that help us. Now back to our diversity of spiritual levels then. We do not want to put the person into training until he's been in worship service and been fed and nourished, where he's been in Christian education and has learned more about the Bible, has started to grow. And so we do our training after the person has got a little spiritual altitude. Now, those of us with the navigators, when we talk about working with people, usually we're talking about working at the training level. Okay, any comments at that point or questions I could quickly clarify, Bob?
Why do you say on occasion challenge? How
okay,
do you
thank
you. This a challenge to accept Christ.
Okay, occasionally a challenge. Let's talk about that. Probably the denomination or the kind of church will make a difference on how much it's that way. I'll use generalizations, and I will use denominational names. I'll be that frank, okay? Those that are in Bible churches, for example, you will not have many outsiders drifting through a Bible church. So that pastor could get away with really challenging more frequently because of his audience has growth. And so really what happens is it drops down a notch to Christian education from the pulpit. If it's a Presbyterian church, you'll get lots of transient people through there, many non-Christians. That's a denomination that beautiful opportunities for evangelism. So then from the pulpit, that would be one where certainly you'd want to give what I've presented here. A Southern Baptist church, it depends on what part of the country as to which route a person would go in that denomination. Or, you know, I can't mention every denomination, but I think that varies. But the trend I see in talking to these pastors is they're relying less on the pulpit to get their job done. And so they're able to relax up there and just bless and encourage and that sort of thing, and get their evangelism done in evangelistic Bible, home Bible studies and through Christian education. So I don't know if that's the way it should be. Bob?
Maybe I ought to rephrase it. You call it challenge here in education.
But, okay. By challenge, I mean shape up or ship out. A challenge is get going on your quiet time. A challenge is are you studying your Bible or not? A challenge would be are you reaching your neighbor? That type of thing.
Not an invitation.
No, I didn't mean invitation by that. Perhaps I used wrong words there. But. And so let's say it was an invitation type of thing. What I'm implying ought to be, listen, God has the answers. There's some people here who would like to tie you into a study where you could go further into this, that sort of thing. Uh-huh. Where if the pastor challenged too early, it causes guilt with the people. That's true. I was talking to a pastor and his board a few months ago, and I shared with them what I've just shared with you, these four levels. And this is a very progressive young church. They're willing to try anything. They said, oh, no. So we're pushing discipleship at every level. There's no place in our program for somebody who's not ready to really give themselves completely to the cause of Christ. We've got to find some place in that program where there's a little cushion. And so that's a good observation. Any other thought? Yes.
With a church as big as, say, 3,500 to 4,000 people every Sunday morning, how do you not give a challenge?
Okay, a church is 3,500 to 4,000.
A person is ready, and a person is not ready for a challenge.
Well, in Denver, Calvary Temple is one of those biggie churches, like 6,000 people every Sunday. 1,500 people in adults only, and 1,500 adults in Sunday school. 29 channels on TV. But one thing that Blair really does well is he gives this uplifting, positive, encouraging message every single Sunday. And I was laid up 3 months or a little more with some back trouble, and so I watched Sunday morning quite a bit. Boy, he turns you on. He said, wow, you know, I'd like to maybe go to a class there, or I'd like to. You see, it gives that approach. So perhaps it takes a man with more drawing power in a big church to handle that. It takes a pretty smooth person just. But I think Fourth Presbyterian Church in Bethesda, Richard Halverson, you get that feel from him when you hear him talk. Dr. Bob Munger, who was in Berkeley and then he was in Seattle and now he's retired. I felt when I heard him preach, it was that sort of thing.
Does the uplifting and the encouragement come only from the pastor, or can you identify some other features of the service that make it that way?
Probably there are other features in the service. The music, the, you know, any testimonials, any. I like for the trend of our discussion to get down to the training level in this whole thing. I'm willing to talk about anything we need to discuss. But, Jerry?
How many people have come to Christ out of an evangelistic Bible class? May or may not have been a part of the first group, but when they committed to the first program, I first make the transition between their having met Christ and then stage one and stage two before we take them into training or until they start training. You understand what I'm asking?
Right. For the tape, let me repeat that. If you have a person comes to Christ outside of the church or with the sanction of the church, maybe reluctantly, at what point do you plug them back into the church program? Is it at the training level? Now, are you implying that the Christian education level isn't going to give them what they need at that church? I'm being very blunt here, but
I think I'm implying that in some cases.
Okay. Okay. Let me take a shot at that. Just happen to have a visual aid here that. No, I've never heard that question before. It seems that people come from a background where they're either from an unchurched background, a liberal background, or an evangelical background. And the problems that we have to deal with in each category varies. Now, the unchurched person is going to have a Bible deficit to begin with. We know that. He won't be familiar with the Bible. And during my ministry the last few years, I have come across two or three individuals who had never seen a Bible before. And so I got the New Testament and said, what is that? Oh, that's the New Testament from the Bible. I've never seen one. Now, that's in the United States of America. Well, that's an extreme, but the unchurched person does not know biblical truth. In one of the churches we were working in, the pastor said he had been a missionary overseas for this denomination for 20-some years, gray-haired, godly man. And he said, the biggest problem I had is I would give an illustration that was biblical and nobody would know what it was. So I'd say, well, like David and Goliath, you know, and the puzzle looks. Or like Samuel in the Old Testament. Who was Samuel? You see? So we have a Bible deficit that we've got to work against. We need to build a bridge to the local church. If they're unchurched, there's some reason they weren't there to begin with. And to be quite frank with you, to decide which church to tie in my converts at times has been a hard decision. I'm just being frank with you. Now, their associations is another thing we have to deal with. Non-Christians, we want them to decrease their association with non-Christians, but we don't want to cut that off, because that'll be their best opportunity for evangelism, and perhaps ours through them. But we've had a problem in that they've been around mediocre Christians. And I don't want my converts to be around a mediocre Christian to see that there is such a thing. And sometimes we've had to kind of do a halfway house thing and let the convert get some altitude and then tie him into the church to where maybe the worship service is the only thing that he attends until he gets some growth. You say, well, it shouldn't be that way. Well, if you got the convert and you want him to make it, I'm trying to be as frank as I can with you. Okay, what about if he has a liberal background? He's got the Bible deficit. He knows a lot about sociology and problems in the world, but not the Bible. He's seen the Bible as a springboard in a talk, but not as the content. He has not been fed. If he is a Christian, if we've picked up an orphan, he has not been fed. And he may have resentment that is anti-church. I don't know how many times in the last few years I've found someone that said, you know, I was in such and such a church for so many years, X number of years, and outside that church I came to Christ. And they resent that. Why was I not told about Jesus Christ and His death on the cross? And there's a couple in another state, stayed in their home, and they are godly people. They've been Christians for about 10 years. They're very effective in a ministry, and I won't even mention which ministry, it's not ours. And when it came up, I still saw anger in their eyes. We were in such and such a church, and boy, they were angry. They're very successful in business, very. So we've got to deal with that. If they're from an evangelical church, no problems, right? No. Busyness is one of the great problems of evangelical Christianity. Busyness. One couple we talked to when we first came to Denver was, they said, we are at our church five nights a week. It's Christians keeping Christians busy so they can't get the job done. Now I'm for activity, you know, it's good, but usually they're poor at relating to people. Have not developed social graces. Not good conversationalists. Don't know how to dress up to date. And I don't mean, you know, being way out and things that would not be acceptable. And so the person with evangelical background needs to be shaped up on some things in those areas. We need to help him turn knowledge into experience. He will perhaps have tons of biblical input. We're working with a couple with a Christian Reform background from Michigan. Biblical background, oh, fantastic. And now all they need is the know-how and the practical. And it's a, I mean, we took over a little church for a Sunday, and some of the couples we were working with, you know, one doctor, he taught the Sunday school, and then this fellow I just mentioned, he preached, and another fellow with IBM, he gave his testimony, and then a dentist and a couple other guys, they were in the homes that evening for discussions. And well, this fellow with a Christian Reformed background got up to preach, and I could not believe it. I mean, it just, biblical content just rolled out. Just, whew, wow. And about all the navigators had done for him is help him get going on a quiet time, a little scripture memory, and, you know. Anything you'd like to say about these people and relating to them? Unchurched, liberal. Now, back to Jerry's question. Let's pick it up there. Okay, what do we do with the convert? Okay, if he's an evangelical, he's probably in a good evangelical church. He will not have resentment. He will have come to a point where he's finally given in to the Lord. And that'll be his reaction. So there's really not much adjustment there. Just continue on with the program. If it's a liberal church, we need to be careful on how fast he moves out of there. We don't want to make big waves, and that's needs to be a matter of prayer. And some of those people will feel led of God to stay in that church for forever, some for several years, some for several months. God has a way of working those things out. And oftentimes the people that... Well, I've said enough on that. That's a difficult one. The unchurched, there I wouldn't hesitate at all to wait until he gains some spiritual altitude before he gets into the church context. But I would sure get him in there for worship services.
Boy, if they've got a wife and family, they're probably going to be going somewhere.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. Take them along with us, maybe. If we're talking about families, I was thinking individual there. That's a good point.
Are you dealing with couples ministry?
Right. Okay. That's right. That's right. A thing we've been advising, you know, people say, "What church should I choose?" And you pastors can, you know, "What church should you choose?" And I say, "Choose for your children, not you. What are your children going to get?" Said, "You know, you're not. Nothing's going to sink you. You know, you could go to First Umpty Ump Church over here, and they can mess you up. And but your children, boy, they need the right input." And you know, my wife and I, we've been working in churches in Denver, you know, through their programs and that. It took us 2 years to decide. Of course, you know, we married a little later, and our daughter's only 3 and a half, and so we didn't have to worry until about 2 years old, you know, before, you know, we get her into the right place by around 2. So we had time, but it took us 2 years to decide. And we were in touch with a lot of churches. Yes, sir.
Now, what if your business and you are in an area, you've got churches around you, and due to the type of business, say that they've got a little resentment to the type of business? I'm not talking about tax. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about an on-board business.
Yes.
And they are fighting the community through the church, so to speak. You happen to be one of those institutes that they're working on.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do for church, especially in wide open rural areas where you drive miles to find mm-hmm. anything? They lock you out.
That's difficult. I don't know.
Now, I've been in isolation most of my life.
Uh-huh.
My boy is grown up. He's 20 years old, and you talk about resentment.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try to hit him very hard.
Right.
I dare any one of these pastors in here to try to counsel him, and he needs it bad, and I can't even touch mm-hmm. him anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to answer all my own
mm-hmm.
at home. Mm-hmm. I have a church in my own hometown. I'm driving 11 miles now because he fights my boss
mm-hmm.
through his church. And I don't mm-hmm. dare join his church, even uh-huh. though it's my basic home church.
Yes. Could you tell me what business, would you mind?
School teacher.
School teacher.
And this gets very political.
I see. Uh-huh.
Very sociological uh-huh. environment. They want the kindergarten in the area mm-hmm. where I'm at now, and there's five mm-hmm. towns fighting for kindergarten.
Uh-huh.
I'm one of the towns fighting the church that's being used for it. It's like a battleground. You don't want to join that church because the first thing you'll do is set you up against the superintendent, mm-hmm. and bam, I'm out of a job.
Mm-hmm.
So I just set like a pinball machine bouncing.
Mm-hmm. That's difficult. Wow. You know, there's been a trend in evangelical circles not to get involved in social issues. And then those with liberal backgrounds have gotten where social action and ills in the community and all this have been their primary emphasis.
And battleground.
And somewhere in the middle there's the way it ought to be. Now, I belong to an association in Denver where a lot of these evangelical pastors come once a month, and some of us that are full-time Christian work get in that. But I like the balance that I see happening to where there is an interest in prison reform. There is an interest in the abortion problem. There is an interest in low-income areas. There is an interest in counseling centers and all this. And so that the needs of these people are met, plus they're hearing about Jesus Christ.
But yet you don't use one individual as an axe or as a scapegoat.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in those situations where I was a scapegoat and I moved on.
You've been in a very difficult situation.
You
back here? What?
You commented earlier on the evangelical church where the busyness aspect was Christians keeping Christians busy.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like for you to comment a little bit more on that.
Okay, some more on Christians keeping Christians busy. An interesting thing happens when a new Christian starts to grow in Christ. And you'll all identify this. Psalm 90 verse 17 says, "And let the beauty of the Lord our God be upon us, and establish thou the work of our hands. Yea, the work of our hands, establish thou it." Now that's a beautiful prayer, that the beauty of God would be on us, and that God would bless what we do in ministry. And so what happens is the young Christian starts to grow and a radiance comes over him or her or them. And people say, "Hey, would you do such and such in our church?" Now I talked to a man yesterday who, one of the fellows he is working with, he started walking with Christ. This fellow told me about this fellow, started walking with Christ. The church said, "Hey, would you be an usher?" "Oh, okay. A committed person. Sure, I'll usher." "Then would you teach such?" "Oh, yeah. Okay. Would you be on this board?" "Oh, yes." So finally he came to my friend and he said, "I'm sorry, I can't be in that Bible study anymore." He said, "I'm too busy." He said, "Now, remember what I told you about a year ago. I said, as soon as you start to have a walk with the Lord, people are going to start grabbing you." So what we have a responsibility before God to do what we think He wants us to do. And we need to be big enough to say no. And with our staff, we say, "Listen, staff, we are tying into local churches, right? You go in there and you do one thing well, and that's it." Now, through the years, as I've worked with the Navigators, I go to my pastor and say, "Listen, let me explain what I'm doing. I'm doing this and this and this. I will teach that one class in the church. And you can see why. Now if I do more, I'm going to spread too thin, and we're not going to get the job done. Now what I'm doing over here, in about 2 years, it's going to produce some more leadership for your church." But so often, the squeaking wheel gets the grease. If you haven't read the little booklet, Tyranny of the Urgent, by InterVarsity, a little 25-cent booklet, you need to read it. A need does not constitute a call. And there are all kinds of needs around us in Denver that we could do something about. And we're not going to touch them. Why? Because if we do, we're going to either ruin our health, crack up emotionally, or we're not going to do well what we're involved in. Or all three. And it's just no way.
How do you justify that? What do you do for them?
Okay, how do I justify that? And what do we do for them? Pray that someone else will meet that need. No couple is the body of Christ. We need to determine where in the body we fit. And we can't be a knee, a thumb, an elbow, and a right ear. I mean, we've probably been called, you know, to be one thing and to do that well. Now within that one thing, we may have two or three activities.
I was going to say, you might also determine if that need is a real need or just somebody thinks you need
to. Is it a real need? And we can be putting out brush fires too. Are we getting to the root of a thing and solving that, or is this just one other thing that has to be done?
Okay. But on the other hand, if we're in the wrong place, we're also keeping someone else from being in their right place.
Mm-hmm.
And someone who is chairman of all 86 committees. Mm-hmm. And God has 85 other people, you know,
right. Right. Thank you. Terry?
I'd like to comment, Ron, from back in antiquity, that never do something, never do that which somebody else can do or will do, when there's many things that they either cannot or will not do. Mm-hmm. That comes back to priority.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Beautiful.
And somebody else could serve on the board, and somebody else could be a deacon, and somebody else could usher, perhaps.
Right.
Now that may give you a reference for whatever you're committed to.
Okay. Maybe you are, but most aren't, Jerry. You and me, we're indispensable. Just a summary sort of thing here is when we talk about our Christianity, there's our life, there's our ministry. And we need to have some kind of balance. Some of you may be familiar with Psalm 127, verse 2. It is in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives his beloved sleep. It says it is foolish to get up early and go to bed late. Psalm 127, 2. Now, by life here, we mean our walk with God. Are we living the life? Are we a man or woman of prayer? Are we in the Word of God? If you continue in my Word, then are you my disciples indeed. John 8:31-32 in there. So, we can get so busy that we no longer are walking with God. Now, often the attacks of Satan are not through overt temptations. Often the good is the enemy of the best, not the bad being the enemy of the best. The good being the enemy of the best. And I've talked to enough church leaders the last few years here to know that some of them are really uptight and wrung out. And I've talk to pastors, say, listen, I told so-and-so, you need to drop two of your activities. You decide. We can't have this.
Excuse me again. Now, what if you do move into a church that does meet your need, you want to work, and yet it's a small church, it's a rural church, and you've got one prominent family doing it all, how do you quietly, without upsetting status quo, making waves, get a little something to do?
The smaller the church, the harder the interpersonal relationships.
In other words, you just sit back and do what I've been doing for 5 years. I sit on a pew and be there every Sunday, so I'm a good principal of the school. I'm be around and be seen.
To answer you directly, what do? I would do a ministry outside the church.
Then you have the opposition openly of the pastor.
No, I don't think so.
I've been told.
You've been told by the pastor
that I will run the Bible studies in town. I don't want you to run the Bible studies. Because I'm taking his people and feeding them against what
okay,
he thinks.
I see your problem.
He's controlling it for himself.
There's only one category of person that nobody wants to fool with. That's the pagans. No church affiliation, no nothing. Go get them. They're free game, you know, and the sky's the limit. And there's no competition. And so there, you've got plenty to do out there.
Go to the unchurched.
Go to the unchurched. Right. You've heard that little story about Charlie in the Army? You heard that little deal? During World War II, Charlie was all thumbs, you know, couldn't do anything right, and he'd stumble around and he could goof everything up, and he was kind of the laughing stock of the company he's in. So they get into battle, World War II, you know, and everybody had just been riding Charlie, giving him a tough time. So the position was overrun by the Germans, and so You know, finally they set up a perimeter and they had the defense and everything was under control. No, nobody killed, but Charlie was missing. Oh, the guys felt bad. Man, we gave him such a rough time. He is a good little guy, you know. And kind of two left feet, but you know, he was really a good guy. Why do we give him so much trouble? So about dusk, one of the guys in the outpost, he looks out on the horizon. And here comes he sees a silhouette. And there are 14 German soldiers with their hands in the air. And here's one little guy behind him marching. And there's Charlie. Captured 14 German soldiers. And they rush up to him and say, Charlie, where'd you get those guys? Listen, guy, head out in the woods. He said, the woods full of them. So if the woods are full of them, you know, just go get you a few. Let me finish something here. Okay, the priority is our walk with God, isn't it? Our life. And all through the New Testament, we see passage after passage after passage after passage after passage on God is more interested in what we are than what we do. That is biblical. There is no doubt about that. His whole objective, Romans 8, is conform us to the image of Christ. Colossians 1, 28, 29, and Philip's Paul says, so naturally we proclaim Christ, we warn everyone we meet, we teach everyone we can all that we know about Him, so that if possible we may bring every man up to his full maturity in Christ. Now that's the second one. Okay? Ministry. So Paul's desire there was, in Colossians 1, 28, 29, to do evangelism, warn every man we meet, evangelism, teach everyone we can all that we know about Him. That's bringing them up. And so ministry in the New Testament is twofold. It's evangelism and it's growth. But it's bigger than growth. It gets, you know, gets beyond that. The word edify is used. The word built up is used. It's kind of growth plus, I guess. Now, when we're dealing with couples, see, as we've worked with singles, we've preached this for years. Said, okay, it's your life and ministry. We've got to go farther with couples. It's your life, it's your ministry, and it's your family. You have a responsibility before God. Husbands, you have a responsibility. I've been giving some Bible study time to the qualifications for spiritual leadership. And the two primary places in the New Testament that's related to the church is Titus 1 and 1 Timothy 3, those passages. And it's interesting, well, in Titus 1, there are 16 qualifications that are laid out. A thing that's been really getting to me, personally, as I've studied these passages, where God's dealing with me, it says to manage your own household well. And I've been in just enough management stuff, not a lot, but read enough books and had to supervise enough to realize that there are principles in management and to realize you've got to get a hold of the thing, to realize you've got a plan, to realize you've got a schedule. And so we're in the process of working on some of those things. And to really make that thing sing. And men, that's your responsibility. You are the management man. That is your job before God. Titus 2 has a beautiful rundown for women. You know, what God expects from you. Titus 2. Titus 1, men. Titus 2, women. Part of it there. But we can be so busy ricocheting off the countryside out there in ministry that we're neglecting the children. We do not have an exemplary marriage. And we're working with couples. Most of the problems are not spiritual, they are family. And as their individual lives mature and get shaped up spiritually, then their family situations get straightened out. There was a PhD in psychology speaking here at Glen Eyrie a few summers ago. He said, from my counseling of Christians, he said, I would estimate that 85% of the marriages are not really happy. Christians. That's his estimate. A godly Christian PhD in psychology who's doing a lot of counseling. In the couples we work with, we have them listen to tapes. We go through George Sanchez thing, workbook, and what's it called? The Scriptural Home Seminar. We go through that. We don't just do this once. I mean, every few months we hit something that develops in that area. And so we can't just have a walk with God, our life. We can't just have, you know, the ministry, those first two. We've got to work on the third one. Okay. How do we do the home seminar? The way we've used it, there are tapes that you can listen to and there are workbooks. And so the format is you do some homework in the workbook before you come. There's what your ideas are. Then you come, get together, and discuss what you wrote down. Then you listen to the tape, take notes, a place in the workbook to take notes. Then you break back into the verse review, not verse review, back into the small groups and discuss then what was said on the tape. And that's the same pattern the following week.
Do you do this in home or in a church?
Either. One church pops in my mind. They're doing it within the context of their church. We aren't handling that. But the pastor wanted that emphasis, and he's handling that. And we've done it in the homes.
Your pattern again is homework, discussion?
It's homework, discussion of the homework when they come. Yes. Listen to the tape. And then discussion of the tape. And so you need about a 3-hour block if you have some refreshments. But you can handle that once a week or every other week.
What's your order of priority?
What's your order of priority on what's up here?
And where does the job come in?
And where does the job come in? Okay, you've got some good questions. I've just so happens I've been working on some things and priorities. And, let's see. Let's just take what we've got here. You have to handle all three. You've got to handle all three. And you've got to handle job. Nothing can be sacrificed. That's the catch. Now, what is priority? Our walk with God is priority. Yes, but not to the sacrifice of some kind of influence on others, and that our family's in good shape. And then you could just add job. Well, I am impressed recently on the work ethic in the Bible. On just, you know, the wholeheartedness and the commands to give ourselves to whatever we do. Colossians 3:23-24, and whatsoever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord. Heartily, that's a big word. And not unto men, knowing that of the Lord ye shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ. So we've got to do all of them. Now, what are we up against on priorities? It depends on the age of the children, on how much time we've got to give to them. Okay, when they're preschool, the mother's tied up, right? Boy, is she tied up. Once they get into school, then she's got some relief. Once they're teenagers, both of you are in trouble. But when do they need our time? When do we need to be with them? When do we need to talk? Okay, when they're little, the talk is frequent. You know, right, you know. When they get older, bigger blocks of time. You better be able to sit down and talk it through. A godly man from Minnesota, Dr. Bob Smith, some of you have heard him, know him. He said something about family that I can't get it out of my mind. I heard it 4 years ago. He said, as a parent, I want my children with me long enough for them to pick up my value systems. Phew, that covers a multitude. That's the, you know, it's not all these little details of what we're trying to do, it's the big picture. Have they, when they leave our home, have they picked up our value systems? Par. We talk about quality time versus, you know, amount of time. So, well, if you can get quality time with them, you know, that's both. There's no substitute for just hours and hours and hours and hours together. Sure, there's quality time. The average father in the United States today with a junior age boy spends 7.5 minutes a week with that boy. That's the average in the United States today. Yesterday in Sunday school class, one of the wives, she said, "You know, I think maybe the ministry God is giving me are 10 and 11-year-old children in our neighborhood. Their parents don't care where they are. Their parents don't care what they're doing. We want our children in our home where we know what they're doing. We want them to have fun here. And we're starting to talk about spiritual things with these children. We're going to have an impact in our neighborhood through those kids." So you talk about ministry. Whew. Family then becomes the key to the ministry. A couple in Albuquerque, New Mexico, you know where they're getting all their contacts for ministry? A mother comes in and says, "Boy, your two children, they mind. They behave. They're happy. Well, what do you do?" And so she just says, "Well, you know, we've found that there are some basic principles in the Bible that really work in the family. Maybe we get together and talk about it sometime." People coming to Christ through that open door, which the well-behaved and happy children.